Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Welcome back to Undisputed. According to Adam Schefter, the Bengals will be parting ways with Andy Dalton. Back in March, The Athletic reported that Dalton was not discussed in the Patriots' immediate plans, but since then, the Patriots did not select a quarterback in the draft. So, Shannon, do you expect Belichick to sign Andy Dalton?
I don't know about signing, Skip, but I do expect the representative, Coach Belichick, to reach out to Andy Dalton's representative. I expect they'll kick the tires, and this is why you don't make a move, Skip. You and I both know, okay, if they select a quarterback with the first overall pick, Andy Dalton has $17 million this year. What's the likelihood that he's going to be on that roster with, you're going to almost have to guarantee Joe Burrow $40 million? Well, it's not very likely. That's why you don't panic. The same reason no one traded for Cam Newton. I know you got to release him. You just signed Teddy Bridgewater for 3 years, $62 million. So why would I give you a draft pick for something I know you're going to discard? Coach Belichick played his hand correctly. Now, if I'm Andy Dalton, that would be one of my first priorities to try to get there. I know they're going to win. I'll get well coached. Know they're going to put me in the best opportunity to win. Skip, look, to say I can sit here and say, because after covering Coach Belichick for as long as I have no earthly idea what makes this man tick and what he's going to do when it comes to player. Because a player that I think might fit perfectly, he wants nothing to do with it. And a player that I don't think he wants nothing to do with, he embraces with open arms. So, Skip, do I believe that Coach Belichick will look into this? I absolutely do. But I can't give you, with any kind of degree of certainty, says, oh, yeah, Andy Dalton is going to be. I think Andy Dalton is better than anything they have on their team currently. And that's including Stead.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So I agree with one point you made. Bill Belichick wants to do nothing conventional. He does not want to be predictable. He doesn't want to go with the flow and do what everybody expects every other coach to do, which would be, oh, correct, you just released Andy Dalton. We'll take him. That seems too easy to me. It seems too predictable, too cut and dried. So my gut feeling is right here, right now, we just heard this breaking news. They will not sign Andy Dalton. I believe that Belichick wants to prove to the world that he has his next Tom Brady via down in the draft. Obviously, Jared Stidham was a fourth round pick as opposed to Brady being a sixth round pick, but it's Brady-esque to say, I'll take him down in the fourth round and I'll show you I got a keeper, I got a winner, I got a future Pro Bowler here. Now, back to Andy Dalton. You know, he's a pretty good quarterback. There are those who argue with me. He's a very good quarterback who got stuck on a bad team for the most part, in a bad situation where an owner doesn't want to spend money and it's a mom and pop owner, even though it's from the lineage of the Brown family, the great Paul Brown. So the point is that, yeah, Andy Dalton has not been in the best circumstance and he's played very well. He has made a Pro Bowl. He has made the playoffs and he's made me on occasion sit back and say, man, that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. He is Brady-esque in that he plays a lot like Tom Brady, except he's a poor man's, maybe a destitute man's Tom Brady. Yeah. But he is Brady-esque in the way he approaches the game. And remember, he's a great fit for New England because he's a good guy, Andy Dalton. He's a great teammate. He won't make waves. He's very coachable. He's everything that you would want scheme-wise, fit-wise, culture-wise, to fit in New England. I get all that. It would seem like just the perfect segue to go in even on the short term and be even a stopgap to get to whatever Trevor Lawrence you want to bring in to hit the jackpot with and get back to the Super Bowl. So I see all that, but it feels too right. It's too right. For Belichick to say, yeah, I'll take Andy Dalton. And I kept saying, does he have that one ace up his sleeve that we don't know? Well, this could be the ace where he just said, to your point, I'll play it out. I'll play it cool. I won't take a quarterback. I'll sit right there and I'll pass on Jordan Love. Then I'll sit right there in the second round and I'll pass on Jalen Hurts. And I'll pass three times on Jacob Eason in the third round. And I'm good because I'm waiting for them to cut Andy Dalton. And predictably, they did cut Andy Dalton because they have Joe Burrow and they're going onward and upward. God bless them. But to me, Shannon, it feels like Stid or bust. It feels like, and I'll give you this, Jared Stidham is more talented than Andy Dalton. He's a better athlete than Andy. He has a little bigger arm than Andy. He has a little more sort of big play flair to him. He has, if I can use that pre-draft term, he has a little higher ceiling, if he could ever hit it, than Andy ever has. Andy hit his ceiling quickly in the NFL. Whatever he had to give you, he gave it to you like that. And under fire, he gives you all he's got, and it's pretty good. But I think Belichick would say, I got a chance to hit the lottery with Stidham more than I would with Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton's just play it safe, try to get through the night, try to get to Trevor Siemian or whoever it might be. Or not Trevor Siemian, Trevor Lawrence coming up. Maybe Trevor Siemian, Trevor Lawrence. Who knows? But so the point is, I'm gonna guess a big no on this. Big no on Andy Dalton to Belichick.
Skip, is there anybody more perfect for Boston and Foxborough and New England than Andy Dalton? The red rifle?
No.
The red hair? He'd be perfect. I mean, you can't, Skip, you can't even get more perfect than this. I think that, and plus, Skip, you have to realize Andy Dalton was playing really, he was playing really well until A.J. Green. Because if you think about it now, Andy Dalton's been in a tough division. He had to deal with the Steelers and the Ravens. And we know what they represent. One had Big Ben, one had Flacco, and Flacco was okay, but they've always had suffocating defenses. Mm-hmm. Now they have Lamar Jackson. So it wasn't very easy for him to win that division, in that division with the Ravens and the Steelers. Because normally, one of those guy teams were going to win that division. With that being said, Skip, in the absence of A.J. Green, because A.J.'s been nicked the last couple of years, a lot. It's hard to go win without your number one receiver. Now, we know Brady really haven't really had a true number one, so to speak. He had Randy Moss and basically slot receivers, Wes Welker, Amendola, and Julian Edelman. Okay, we get that, Skip. And so to try to say, well, Brady never had that, but Brady's Brady. Brady is different in that matter. Everybody can't work unless you give them great workers around him. Brady seemed to be was able to do a lot more with less. But, Skip, this is where you and I are going to differ. Coach Belichick does not need to win with Stidham. He needs to win a Super Bowl with any quarterback not named Brady. As long as he does that, he feels validated, just like Coach Belichick says, Coach Belichick, Tom Brady says, I just need to win a Super Bowl with a coach not named Belichick, and I'm made. That's how they're looking at Skip. Yeah, I'm sure. Have a guy on the roster and just go from there. But Coach Belichick just needs to be on that podium, win it with the Super Bowl trophy, and that quarterback isn't Tom Brady. And then people will look at him like, see, I told you it was him. Tom Brady standing up there, if he's next to Bruce Arians, man. That might be the only time, Skip Bayless, Tom Brady really let that hair down and tell you, no, it's not going to happen then. It's going to happen that Monday or Tuesday and to sit down with Jim Gray. That's when he's going to sit back and start to gloat, and you're going to see Tom Brady in a light that you've never seen him before.
Okay, you're right. But, hey, what if Bill Belichick could win a Super Bowl with Jared Stidham? Would not that be the ultimate touche to Tom Brady? Right? That's it. That's the essence.
What if he won one with Andy Dalton? Man, Andy Dalton, you know, Skip, how you win anything with somebody from the Bengals? I mean, how you do anything, Skip? Come on. You mean to tell me he took Andy Dalton? Everybody been saying Andy Dalton was terrible. Oh, he couldn't even get clear. He couldn't even win a playoff game. All the home playoff games he had, he couldn't win one. He's terrible. And Coach Belichick said, watch me. Skip, you know Coach Belichick is the ultimate watch me coach. Watch me. And that's what he's more apt to do something like that. He's good. Skip, he's not, you know, it's 4th and 1, punt the ball. It's kind of like against Peyton Manning. Skip, 4th and 1, punt the ball, play defense. Yep. What is Coach Belichick doing his own 25, 30-yard line? He goes for it. So he's going to do things that's unconventional where other coaches like, nah, I'm just going to play. I'm going to play it by the book. Coach Belichick says, hell, I wrote the book. I'm going to do it my way. And that's what he's going to do, something very unorthodox. But all he has to do is win that Lombardi and his quarterback isn't Brady. And Coach Belichick is going to fold his arm because he all, you know, Coach Belichick never is the guy that he always believes he's the smartest in the room. Most times than not, he is. He's going to be sitting back there twirling that whistle like, y'all thought I needed Brady. I made Brady. He might come out with a tell-all book, how I made Tom Brady into the GOAT quarterback. He might.
Maybe. So I think you're saying that Belichick will go with Andy Dalton.
Skip, it's hard for me to see a scenario where you don't at least kick the tie. Skip, Andy Dalton or Brian Hoyer. Even if you say, well, I'm giving Steeds the first chance to start. Even if you frame it to Andy Dalton like that, would you rather have Brian Hoyer or Andy Dalton?
Honestly, that's a close call for me. I have respect. I do have respect for Brian Hoyer, what he's done. He's played in big games also. He hasn't made a Pro Bowl, but he's had more than moments of success. And this is his third go-round with New England, so he definitely knows the system, and he knows sort of Belichick's whims and how you have to sort of manage Belichick much more than Andy Dalton would. So I don't know about this. I think it's already set in concrete to me. And I could be wrong, but it feels set in concrete that he's going to go with Brian Hoyer, might even start him for a few games just to ease Stid into the flow, depending on how they got off the first couple of games. And yet again, Shannon, I'm seeing the cupboard is fairly bare in New England because
it is.
Belichick has done next to nothing in the free agency period. And I thought his draft, by what I expected, was pretty lousy. Maybe he knows a whole lot more about these down-the-line picks than I do, but I'm sorry. I'm not seeing that he hit any home runs in his draft. Mel Kiper did not like his draft for what that's worth, and to me it's worth a lot. So, again, where has he improved his football team? I don't see it.
Hell, Skip, but how far down the line are these trees going to bear fruit? Hell, I'd be starved to death. These guys need to come start bearing fruit fairly quickly. It's not like you said, he doesn't have Tom Brady, so if you have a bad game that he can bail you out. So these guys are going to have to play right away, and they're going to have to play well, Skip, because they're going to try to win football games with their defense like they did last year. But I'm taking Andy Dalton 1,500 days over Brian Hoyer. Skip, Brian Hoyer's on what? His 8th, 9th, 10th team? Come on, Skip.
10th.
So almost a third of the teams he's been on.
When you look at it that way. No mercy. Dak Prescott took a large step in his production last season, and the Cowboys led the league in yards per game. After they lost Randall Cobb, Travis Frederick, and Jason Witten in the offseason, they did add CeeDee Lamb at number 17 in the draft. So, Shannon, will the Cowboys' offense be better or worse this season?
You know, that's a very dangerous thing to assume that a team is going to pick right up where they left off last year, and I understand. But, Skip, how did they win games last year? It was their offense. Skip said it was their defense that kept letting them down. Jason Garrett not having that defense ready to play. They was what, third, second or third, maybe even fourth in points scored, number one in yards. So their offense, they could produce points. Now, the problem that they have is that they got too one-sided. They would fall behind, abandon the running game, and Dak would have to throw. Skip, I'm looking at it, in 7 of their losses, they scored 10 points or less through the first 3 quarters. That won't get it done. And so this is why I call it, you know, empty calories, because that's what they have. They would be behind by so much, and then you have to throw, get yourself back into the game, only to lose by 10 or 14 like they were doing on a normal occurrence. And Skip Bayless, my quarterback's a warrior. My quarterback, I want Dak, and he'll battle. Yada, yada, yada. No, you were down by 1,700 points, and you got to score to within 1,500, but you still lost by 200. Skip, I don't like to assume that you automatically pick back up because you know, having covered this game, Skip, everybody starts at the bottom of the mountain. Just like Kansas City can't assume that they're going to start where they left off last year, everybody starts from the bottom. So with CeeDee Lamb, yeah, they should be better. I mean, what aspect? Are you going to win the division? No. No, no, no.
Okay, my turn. All I know is the offense had better be better or my team is going to be sunk again. All I know is my team led the National Football League in yards per game. But wait a second, it was sixth in points scored. Well, the object is to score points, and the ultimate object is to win games. They won eight, and they lost eight. 8-8, 8-8, 8-8. That was Jason Garrett's middle name as he was born. His mother christened him old 8-8 Jason because that was his MO his whole time in Dallas. He just kept basically going 8-8. He's a 500 football coach, and I, for one, am glad he's gone. Good guy, too nice of a guy, actually. Glad he's gone. Now, back to this question. I thought the offense last year was terribly overrated because at key times it was just terrible. And you were right about empty calories. I did think, especially in the Green Bay loss at Jerry World, Dak was a warrior. He would not quit. He kept fighting. He also kept fighting at Chicago. It felt like more of a lost cause, but he threw for the most fourth quarter yards of any quarterback all year in Chicago in what was still an ugly loss. But the point was, when it was time to go score touchdowns, this offense couldn't score touchdowns. At New England, it was a huge game, week 12. It was a turning point game. It was a measuring stick game for my football team against Brady and Belichick up there in the cold weather at their place in Foxborough. My team did not score a single touchdown in that game. Then week 16, it's do or die, sink or swim. You got a shot. You can win the division if you beat the Eagles at the Eagles. My team did not score a single touchdown in that game. And then how about this? At New Orleans, I couldn't defend it. I didn't think Dak played poorly. I thought the defense actually played pretty well, but it was Teddy Bridgewater and the Saints. My team managed to score one touchdown and lost 12-10. And then at the Jets, my team couldn't score a touchdown for three quarters. Of course, Amari tapped out, said, oh, I got a little thing with my leg, and I don't think I can play the rest of the game. He had one catch. Okay. And again, they lost 24-22 ultimately. Dak battled back, but it was too little too late. And then at Chicago, they scored one touchdown the first three quarters. That won't get it done. They got embarrassed. And then against Green Bay and Buffalo at home, Buffalo on Thanksgiving, they got humiliated because they scored only one touchdown in the first three quarters. Well, okay, so I just gave you all the huge negatives, yet they led the league in yards per game. Something was really wrong with the offense. And I keep telling you, the reason I can't defend Dak in his negotiation, which is still stalemated, still at an impasse, still going south instead of north, he didn't make enough key plays like he had done the previous 3 years, where he would decide the game by making the play at the moment, legs or arm. Last year, that didn't happen. And yet last year, well, let's just look at what was there last year that's not here this year. Travis Frederick's a perennial Pro Bowler. He tried to play last year, you know, off his autoimmune deficiency and syndrome. He didn't like the way he played. He thought he was below average. He couldn't take it, so he quit. And not quit, he just retired. And God bless him. I appreciate that. Then Jason Witten last year was the third best receiver in catches on the team. He's obviously now somehow a Las Vegas Raider, figure that. And Randall Cobb was the fourth best receiver on the team. And Randall Cobb signed with the Houston Texans and they overpaid him. They gave him $9 million a year because they had just given away DeAndre Hopkins, but he's gone. So those are three, you could argue, big losses. So Amari last year obviously caught 52 balls at home, 27 on the road. Well, something's really wrong with that, but you know what that got him? That got him a new $100 million contract. No road warrior, he was more of a road weenie, and that got him $100 million because they didn't have a way out. They needed Amari that badly. But thank you, football gods, CeeDee Lamb fell into our laps at number 17. So can CeeDee change the world? Yeah, I believe it. I told you going in. I'm not second guessing. I first guessed. I told you he's the best receiver in the draft. He's a number one. Jerry Jeudy will prove to be a number two slot receiver type. Still very good. I don't condemn John Elway for taking him. CeeDee is a number one. He's an alpha. He's a difference maker. He's DeAndre Hopkins, where you just have a hard time guarding him and keeping him from snatching footballs out of the air. As one scout said, he can just catch the crap out of the football. Well, I think he will, and I think he'll serve double-edged sword purpose for the Dallas Cowboys in that he'll be catching big balls on third and eight, but he'll also be inspiring Amari to compete with him and live up to him, especially on the road. So do I think that the passing attack can be more consistent on big downs? Yes, I do. Which brings me to Ezekiel Elliott. Yeah, I kept saying, he looks like he's running in Cabo Sand.
Yeah.
He got paid, and then he didn't earn his money. He dropped to fourth in the league in rushing, which is not all bad. 85 yards a game, but it wasn't Zeke. It wasn't who I'd come to expect. And the killer stat I told you was on first down when he had the second most carries in the whole National Football League on first down. And guess what? In yards per carry on first down, he ranked 18th. Do the math. Second most carries, yards per carry on first down, 18th. Well, that means he was going for 1 yard, 0 yards, minus one, 2 yards, 0 yards, minus two. That's how it kept going. And all of a sudden, Dak is in second and 10, second 11, second and eight. It's hard. You can't win that way. You put yourself so far behind the chains that ultimately you're going to fail in the NFL and you're going to go 8-8, which is what they went. So have they improved their defense some through the draft and free agency? Yes, they have. I expect it to be 20% better than last year when it was pretty lousy. But in the end, this team will go as far as Dak's offense carries it, with Mike McCarthy giving it a new feel, new input, a new sort of direction. And obviously he coached Joe Montana and Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. So I'm hoping he'll bring a new, just a new touch to it, with Kellen Moore still calling the plays, but the game plans will be Mike McCarthy's. So my point is, it better be better than it was last year, and I do think CeeDee will make the big difference to put it over the top to be a playoff, big play, big game offense as opposed to last year.
Well, what we saw, Skip, is that it worked really well. This team worked really well when they played through the running game. Well, they fell behind by so many so often, so quickly, they neutralized the run game. Skip, I think the most important down as far as creativity is the first down, because the Cowboys just hand the ball to Zeke and run into the line. There was no creativity. Look at Kyle Shanahan and the creativity that he creates on first down running the football. He doesn't just toss the ball to those running backs or just hand it to them. He gets creative with it. Look at the Kansas City. They get creative. Skip, so the question I have for you, is Zeke going to be better this year than he was last year? Because you said he wasn't very good. Well, if he's better this year, they should be better. Is Amari Cooper going to be better? See, for me, Skip, when I look at this offense, they don't need to be better. They need to be more efficient. Because, see, what happened doesn't do you any good, Skip, to go up and down the field, is that when you need a touchdown, you can't get it. You need to get in field goal position, you turn the ball over on down. So if you're more efficient, you're plenty good as is. The question is, when you need it, that's the mark of any great offense or any great defense. Kansas City proved when they needed scores late in the ballgame, Skip, they came from behind all three playoff games by at least 10 points. And they ended up winning the game by at least 10 points. When you need a play, can you go make it? The Cowboys, yes, they led the league in yards, but when they needed one play, they couldn't make it. Defense, when you need a stop, no matter how great you are, can you get off the field on third down? Can you get a turn, make them turn the ball over on downs when you need to? So that's going to be the telltale, Skip. Dak is unhappy. He's not participating in virtual OTAs. Probably won't participate in virtual or real training committee camp. So it's going to be, Skip, that there's a lot going on right now, Skip.
Okay. Last point, the offensive line. Obviously, I've loved it in the past. I thought it was the best offensive line. Now, as Ty Smith ages and gets a little beaten up, I still believe it can be top five. No Travis Frederick, but that Connor McGovern, that was their second-round pick last year, played some center, a lot of center, at Penn State. I think he can fill the gap. I think he can be okay. I think that, obviously, with Zach Martin, Lyle Collins, they still have enough Pro Bowl firepower up front. They can be top five. And if they can play at a higher level, a more inspired level under McCarthy than they played last year when they were often deadheaded and they got defeated at the point of attack too many times in too many key plays, if they can rise up to their level and play up to their potential that they still have, this team will be, it could challenge it. It could be the best offense in pro football if it maxed out on every level.
Well, I think the biggest key for your offensive line is the health of Ty Smith back and the needs of Zach Martin, because it seems every year at some point in time, we start seeing these guys listed on the injury report. Ty Smith with his back, we know it's caused him to miss some time, and Zach Martin with that knee, he's missed some time with that knee. So that's going to be the telltale. These other guys are young enough, but Zach Martin and Tyron Smith, they've been through some battles, Skip. You know, when you block as much as they have, because they've had three times, they've led the league in rushing. With DeMarco Murray, Zeke's led the league in rushing twice, and he was leading in yards per game the year he was suspended. So they've got some miles on them, Skip, but it's going to be very important for them is to be able to hold up, because when I got a new coach, you got CeeDee Lamb, Skip, you're prime. I mean, that window's not going to stay open forever, Skip. At some point in time, no matter how nice the breeze is, you got to close the window. Ready to say, boy, we going to bed, close that window. So at some point in time, that window's going to close, Skip, now. No mercy.
So get this, guys. Brett Favre believes Aaron Rodgers will end up finishing his career outside of Green Bay. Favre said the Packers burned the bridge to Rodgers when they traded up to draft quarterback Jordan Love in the first round. So, Skip, is Favre right about all of this?
Yes, he's right. But he's upside down in how he's looking at it, because he doesn't understand this is what the Packers wanted from the start. But before I quickly explain that, allow me to say that all of us out there watching this show, all of us here on Undisputed, we've all seen things over the last couple of months we've never seen in our lives. And all of a sudden, this also qualifies, because I never thought I would hear Brett Favre speaking for Aaron Rodgers. For the longest, he wouldn't even speak to Aaron Rodgers or vice versa. And all of a sudden, Brett Favre is Aaron's big brother. He's his PR director, his confidant, his spokesman. Well, what is happening? Day is night, night is day. It's bizarro world. And Brett Favre has gone mad. Brett and Aaron have both gone mad, because they're suddenly blood brothers, and I never saw that coming. But because Brett has now gotten so close to Aaron that he's speaking for him after speaking to him, that he's lost objectivity on what is actually transpiring here. Yes, the bridge is burned because the Packers lit the match. They intentionally poured the gasoline underneath the bridge and set it on fire because they want out from under Aaron Rodgers. Brett Favre is painting this as if the Packers screwed up. They made a huge mistake here. They stumbled into something that is going to turn on them and explode in their face. Nope. They did all this on purpose because they're seeing what I've been trying to tell Shannon for 3 years. Aaron Rodgers statistically is in decline. As Bob McGinn, who covered the Packers for almost 40 years and gives grades to the quarterbacks every year, keeps saying, Aaron had two pedestrian years the last 2 years, gave him C pluses for those 2 years. And on top of that, he's a diva. He is a blame deflecting finger pointer, and he's hard to live with. And Matt LaFleur finally just said, I've seen enough. I've had enough of his act, as McGinn wrote yesterday. So now Brett Favre isn't seeing the forest for the trees that are all on fire right now, because in the end, they want to move on from Aaron. They're going to try to move on from him next year by handing the ball more to A.J. Dillon, who they took in the second round out of Boston College, 250 pounds, ran 4.5 at the combine, just a straight-ahead Derrick Henry of a back. They're going to try to pound the rock next year and take the ball more and more out of Aaron's hands as they wait for a year or two to see if Jordan Love is as great as they think. And as soon as they have their opening, now they're hoping that Aaron Rodgers does demand a trade. I think they would love to be able to trade out from under the money that Aaron is making. And I think sooner than later, Aaron Rodgers will be somebody else's quarterback. And then we'll see who was right about this, Packers or Aaron or Brett on this, because in the end, the Packers want out from under Aaron.
Skip Favre said, I talked to Rodgers. I'm not going to talk about what we talked about, but he was, let's just say, surprised they went in that direction. Okay, you talked to Aaron, and now you're coming out, Skip, and you're saying all this. The bridge has been burned. Who said that? what are you talking about bridges? How you going to have a conversation with someone and then say, I'm not going to say what we talked about, but there was like bridges being burned. He was kind of like surprised that this happened. Everybody going to automatically assume. Now, I wouldn't be surprised at some point if the general manager and the head coach and Brett sit down. Skip, I remember I was growing up and my aunts were still living at home and my grandfather, and they would always be upset because either they couldn't go somewhere or he told them if they did go, they had to be home at a certain time. And my grandfather would come in from working in the fields and he'd come in and everybody's sitting on the couch with the mouth stuck out. And my grandfather would simply turn to all of them and say, you got something on your mind you want on your ass? Well, I don't think they can whip Aaron Rodgers like my grandfather would have done had they got out of line. But I do believe they're going to have a conversation, Skip. And I believe we're going to talk about this a little later. And I believe the conversation is going to get very, very uncomfortable. Because like you said, Aaron Rodgers has probably rubbed a lot of people in the media the wrong way. And I can assure you he's rubbed some people in the Packers the wrong way. Because Skip, he strikes me as a guy, and I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong, I apologize. The guy that has power, he's not afraid to use it and say certain things that as a person that was a good player and that got certain privileges that you never abuse. And so I'm looking at Aaron as like, y'all think y'all can do this to me? It's kind of like Lonzo in Training Day. You think you the police? I'm the police. I run this piece. And they say, no, you don't, Aaron. You don't run this piece anymore. You ran this piece. Now we're in charge here. We're taking it back. Skip, boy, this is a blow here. This is a blow because they traded up. Skip, it was one thing. He was already going to be upset that you took a quarterback. But the mere fact that you moved up, you gave up assets that you possibly could have used in order to help this team now. For a player that's not going to help us now, that's going to help us down the road, Aaron Rodgers like, well, how in the hell does that help me down the road? I'm in the car right now. I'll worry about down the road when I get down the road. I'm in the car right now trying to get down the road. And y'all do this, Skip, they're going to have a conversation. I don't care. They're like, nah, everything's cool. Because remember, Skip, oh, Aaron called Jordan Love and he was all yada yada. I mean, bull jive. No quarterback's done. Nope. That's not how they wired, Skip. They're too competitive. And they realize, Skip, Tom Brady did everything he possibly could, Skip. That's why he fought so hard for that suspension. It wasn't the fact that he was going, yeah, he wanted to clear his name, Skip. How did he get the job? Someone presented him that opportunity, and he never left the field. He got, you know, he Wally Pipped somebody, and he didn't want to get Wally Pipped. So, it's like, And Aaron Rodgers knew Brett Favre is speaking from experience. Aaron Rodgers is talking to someone that can relate to what he's going through. And I can assure you, when he's having these conversations, Skip, he didn't expect Brett to go on Rich Eisen and just talk about, well, I talked to him. He's supposed to say, well, look, when it happened to me, this is how you do it, Skip. Man, when it happened to me, let me tell you what I was thinking. The bridges were burned. I'd have never mentioned I talked to Aaron. The bridges were burned. I was hurt because Aaron wasn't going to be able to help us in the next 2 to 3 years. He was going to be able to help them down the road. Okay, I get it. You want to build down the road, but how does that help me right now? But when you say I talked to Aaron and you talk about just my gut feeling, man, that's Aaron talking through you. You happen to be a ventriloquist. That's Aaron Rodgers. And you speaking for Aaron Rodgers. Because I believe everything that Brett said, Skip, that's what Aaron told him.
Okay, I got to backtrack. You just dared to say that the reason Tom Brady fought so hard in court over Deflategate was to protect his job?
No. I said he wanted to protect his legacy, but quarterback, Skip, if you think about this, Peyton Manning, even Neil Downs, Peyton Manning did not want to give quarterbacks, don't want to give other quarterbacks an opportunity because you know they're like, well, hold on. He did pretty good, and he doing pretty good for $5 million. Well, I want to pay that guy $25 million. So you want to limit the opportunities that someone have to see your replacement. You want him to keep him. I don't know. Is he ready? No, Skip. Of course he wants to defend because they got this asterisk by his name. Tom Brady allegedly cheated. And some people believe he did. Some people believe he didn't. I don't care anything about that. Tom Brady was supposed to. You go down swinging. But I'm just saying, Skip, Tom Brady understood that there was a great chance these guys, Skip, and remember, it was what Coach Belichick saw in Tom Brady's absence that started the wheels rolling with Jimmy G. That was the start of it.
But the reason Brady fought so hard and so long, first in district court, then appeals court, was because his coach threw him under the bus first. And
then
it appeared to Tom and his inner circle that it appeared the NFL was willing to sacrifice Brady's legacy and reputation to punish the Patriots for all of their rules breaking that had come before. Yeah. That once and for all, they wanted to, for Spygate and any number of other potential violations of rules all the way back to the first two Super Bowl walkthroughs that some accused them of taping illegally, that they wanted to get the Patriots once and for all. And Brady said, not on my watch. And it looked like Tom at 36 going on 37 at that point was nearing the end. And it felt like the NFL was saying, well, it's okay. He's already done enough. We can throw him under our bus, too, and Brady would have none of it because all he ever said was, yes, I asked the ball boys to deflate the footballs to the lower end of regulation on the inflation.
Right.
So, again, I don't think it had anything to do with getting Wally Pipped and losing his job.
Skip, I believe that Brady believed that he did nothing wrong. And if you believe you've done nothing wrong and your only recourse is to go to court and fight it, that's what you should do. That's what the law of the land, that's even if you're in a regular, forget you play football. He believes he didn't do anything wrong. But I said this, Coach Belichick threw him slam up on the bus. Not only did he throw him under the bus, Coach Belichick was driving the bus and was looking out and open the door like the whole school buses give, the handle up there, they open the door and you hop on, Coach Belichick open the door and look so y'all can see him. Because ain't nobody, hold on. All you had to do is like, look, guys, we play by the rules, we inflate. He's like, I don't know anything about no balls. Go ask Brady. Go ask Tommy. Go ask Tommy. The last thing.
What?
You're supposed to shield your players, not expose them. But, Skip, I just think the thing is that Aaron Rodgers is starting to see the writing on the wall, is that when you move, Skip, What do you think Alex Smith thought in Kansas City, Skip? They moved up 17 spots. Okay, Green Bay didn't move up 17 spots. They moved up four. But they moved up. If you move up, Skip, you really want that person. That's what that tells me. You really want that person. Skip, it's kind of like, if I didn't have the relationship one for you, I'm going to get married in 2021. Say I'm going to get married in August of 2021. But you know what? This is the right one. I'm going to move that thing up. This thing going to happen Labor Day 2020. You really want to get married? Well, you move Zoom up the draft board to take Jordan Love. Man, Aaron Rodgers was out there in Malibu. He probably grabbed Danica by the hand. Danica, let's go for a walk. I can't watch anymore. And threw the TV out the window and just started walking down the beach.
Agreed. Bridge burning because they set it on fire.
Whew, at least they're living in Malibu. That part is the only good thing right now for Aaron Rodgers, hanging out with Danica. Thank you for the relationship advice. No mercy. Did a poll of 20 NBA personnel that included coaches, scouts, and execs about who would be the best young player to build a team around. Luka Doncic ran away with 17 of 20 first place votes, followed by Zion, who only had one first place vote, and 11 for second place. So, Shannon, do you agree with this?
I do. I would build my franchise around Luka Doncic. He just turned 21 2 months ago. Skip, he's 29-99, and he doesn't have the injury risk. He's a better outside shooter. He can get to the paint. He can shoot the three. Both of those guys, can shoot better from the free throw line. But, Skip, I just saw an interview with Zion, and Zion's looked like he picked up some weight during quarantine. And one of the GMs says the injury risk with Zion is always going to be there. It's as simple as that, Skip, and this is the reason why I'm going to take Luka. If you tell me Zion is going to manage his weight for the next 10 years, then I might reconsider. But I just think the risk because of a man that size and with his explosiveness, I just think the injury risk is too great. So I'm willing to build my team around Luka Doncic. I'm going to get more points. I'm going to get more rebounds. Skip, you talking, he started his career, his first game back. He was 4-4 from the three-point line. Since then, he's 2-9 in his last 18 games. He's not the outside shooter that you thought he was or that he – and for me, it comes down simple, Skip. I won't bore you with any more semantics. The injury risk is too great for me to build my team around Zion if Luka and Ja Morant are options.
Okay. You are increasingly harder and harder on Zion about his weight. He's a huge young man. And I saw the same interview, and the whole point of it was Zion was saying he was working harder in quarantine than he did pre-quarantine. And I don't have any problem with his weight. That's just who he's always been. If you want to tell me he's going to be routinely hurt through his NBA career, you got me on that. If you want to say that Luka is more proven at this stage and age, you really got me because I can't argue with 29-9-9. But they're misleading numbers within 29-9-9. And I'm going to tear them all to pieces. And you dared to say that Luka is a better outside shooter. He's a horrible shooter from three. Completely, utterly overrated from three. So far this interrupted season, among 149 qualified three-point shooters in the NBA, Luka, your man, ranks 141st of 149. He's making 31.8% of his three-point shots. And he's not great from the free throw line, 73%. If he's that guy, right, he should be 88 or 90%, especially as a quote-unquote point guard. I love his ability to pass the basketball. It's special. The rest of it, not so much. Because when it comes to playing defense, he doesn't. He is a liability on the defensive end. I can't forget that Laker game back on the night of November 1st when the Lakers said, Kuzma said after the game at Dallas, we were just passing to whoever Luka was covering. And Luka, in defensive win shares per game, ranks 141st. Wow, 141st from three and 141st in defensive win shares. That's not very good. And then furthermore, in the fourth quarter, it's odd to me, he routinely disappears. Like in fourth quarter shot attempts, he ranks 45th in the league. LeBron still ranks first, but LeBron's trying to stuff the stat sheet in blowouts.
Oh, my goodness.
No, he's shooting more in the fourth quarter. Yeah, but Luka ranks 45th. He just sort of fades away. And in clutch time points, and that's last 5 minutes with the game 5 points one way or the other, clutch time points, he's tied for 37th. I haven't seen him make many big shots late in games, and I've seen him miss a number. So you pile all that on top of the fact that the book on him so far is just rough him up. Like a lot of Euro players, just go hard at him. The Lakers go hard at him.
Yeah.
And just sort of literally and figuratively knock him out of the game psychologically. It's almost like bad boy Pistons. Just go after him. And that's not a good early book on a guy that you say you'd build your franchise around. While Zion, yeah, to me, we've only seen 19 games so far, and he's a force. Yeah. He's a wrecking ball.
Well, hold on.
He's going to rough you up.
Hold on.
He is unguardable in the paint.
Let me ask you a question, Skip. Why have we only seen him play 19 games? They played almost 60 games. Why have we only seen him 19?
Well, he had a knee scope.
Whoa. Thank you. I got it. Hold on. Now, you told me, got injured in college, got injured coming into the NBA. And you want me to build my franchise around that. So there's a greater percent chance that he's going to be injured again. I'm going with the guy that doesn't get that plays. That's what you tell me. That's what you've been telling me.
But
all leading up to the draft.
Okay, but Tua reportedly had 5 surgeries at Alabama. Zion had no surgeries at Duke. He did hurt his knee, but they just let it heal. And then he needed a scope after the NBA preseason, and he came back fairly quickly from it. And again, if you tell me he just hurt every year, you got me. I don't think that's going to happen. And if it doesn't, you're going to be in big trouble because this kid is special. This kid has the charisma and the it factor to lift and lead a team to a championship. I don't see that yet in Luka. I'm sorry, I just don't.
Skip, I'm not arguing whether or not he's special, but as Tua, I believe Tua can change the way he plays. I believe he can get the ball out of his hands quicker. I can believe that he doesn't have to make sure he doesn't take those shots. And he has to learn, Skip, you have to, like in football, you have to learn how to fall. I mean, you just can't fall like you out there in the yard, you know what I'm saying? You have to, because guys are falling on you. And I think those are things. Can Zion change the way he plays? He's an explosive, large man that's going to be required to be explosive on a nightly basis over an extended period of time. How do you change that? That's what he is. That's who he is. So like I said, Skip Bayless, if you tell me, Skip, he's hired one of the best nutritionists in all the world. He has a professional chef that gets his meals and that he's going to drop 30 pounds and he's going to play at this weight for the foreseeable future. Okay, Skip, now you're going to make me rethink this thing. But until I see this over a stretch of time, Luka, Skip, is only going to get... Skip, the guy's 21. He's running a team. Zion is not running the team. Luka is asked to do way more than Zion is asked to do. And Zion is dependent. He needs Lonzo. He needs someone to get him the ball. Luka, like, I got the ball. I can do what I want to do with it.
Okay. But can Luka shoot it at a high level? I say no. And remember, Zion is a year and 4 months younger than a Luka who had already played 4 years of pro basketball in Europe and came here and has now played 2 more pro basketball years. Well, that's you're miles ahead in experience from Zion. I think you're going to have to sit back if we ever get back the NBA. And you're going to sit back on a nightly basis and say, whoa, he's getting better and better and better. You saw it in big games at Duke. He rose and he shone. And on opening night with the world watching, he makes his first 4 3-point shots. He has a sweet stroke, and I think he can get better and better from three and from the free throw line. No mercy.